just because you're an expert in AWS doesn't mean that you're going to be an expert in GCP, really, because the model is flipped on its head. And once you kind of get a sense of GCP, you might end up loving it. It's really hard to run into any friction when you're first creating them. Great for uptick if you really want people to use your services right away and not have any issues. Horrible for security. It just seems like there's no way to undo that crime against service account. I'm just assuming countless customers that are relying on this functionality just to keep the engines of their Google projects going. I can only imagine that there is a lot of hand-wringing internally about this awful design decision that was made. Well, I love your mention shared responsibility model. Google, they don't have the shared responsibility model, or they think of it more as shared fate, which is this concept of they have skin in the game as well, as far as how secure their customers are. If a customer is failing, they are failing as well.
Google Workspace, Google BigQuery, Google Analytics. You know what all of them have in common? Google Cloud. You may not know this, but you may already be using Google Cloud, either through companies that you may have acquired that are using Google Workspaces with additional access to Google Workspace and Google Cloud, or you may already be working in the Google Cloud space where you're trying to find a great harmony of security between multiple versions of Google Cloud that you may be maintaining in your organization. Now, this episode, we had Kat Traxler, who is from Vector.ai. She's a researcher there. And we spoke about, first, how do you even get into a Google Cloud account? What are some of the low-hanging fruits? What are some of the default that you can explore if you're trying to pen test a Google Cloud account? What is the methodology for approaching a Google Cloud account? What are some of the nuances of, say, maybe if you're coming from an AWS or an Azure background, are there comparisons that you can do for similar attack patterns from there that can be applied over here? We also spoke about the methodology from a perspective of the complex structures that can exist. Like, you may be really mature in AWS, but not as mature in GCP. So you might go down the path of, I'm just going to run some kind of config review. Or talking about config review, another thing we talk about is the fact that it is actually way more than a config review when you're trying to do a pen test, especially a cloud security pen test, whether it's AWS, Azure, Google Cloud, or whatever the cloud you put in. The information that you collect is you're collecting evidence which would inform your pen test. It's not that, oh, config review is the only thing that cloud security pen test is. So I appreciate Kat sharing a lot about how you could do this in Google Cloud and how it's more than a config review and some of the tooling and structure. She also spoke about her open source tool called Durf and other tools that are useful and other tools that can be used to have, hey, if you have an existing infrastructure, this is how I would run an attack on it. But if you don't have an infrastructure, but you want to still form some form of infrastructure that can learn from it, then Kat's Durf open source tool would be amazing for it. And the one that we called out from Christoph as well, and the example that was called out by Kat for Christoph's open source as well, called Stratus. And also the example of another open source repository called Stratus Red Team that was called out by Kat as well, by Christoph from Datadogs. So all that and a lot more in this episode. If you know someone who's trying to do pen tests in Google Cloud, definitely share the episode with them so they can learn from this as well. And if you are someone who probably is watching it or listening to this for the second or third time, I really appreciate if you can give us a follow, subscribe if you're watching this on LinkedIn or YouTube. But if you're listening to this on Apple or Spotify, definitely give us a follow and leave us a review or rating over there. It definitely helps more people like Kat and others who are amazing at what they do to come on the show and talk about what they love best. It is sharing knowledge on how you could be a better cloud security pen tester out there tomorrow. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Kat. This was continuation of our Offensive Security Month, and I would see you next episode. Peace.
By bringing developers and security together, you don't have to choose between speed and security. Develop fast, stay secure.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Cloud Security Podcast. We are continuing with our Offensive Security Month, and today's topic is Google Cloud. Pen testing, research, we'll find out. So let me bring on my friend over here. So she's going to be the better person to talk about this than me. So hi, Kat. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me again, Ashish.
No problem. Thanks for coming over. I feel like it doesn't feel like that long that I saw you last week, a couple of weeks ago at Black Hat.
It was such a pleasure seeing you and Shipley. It was just like magical, really.
I appreciate that. But I know a lot about you, but for people on the internet, some of them at least may not know who Kat is. Could you give us a bit more about yourself and where you are today these days?
Yeah, so I find myself with my feet in lots of different spaces in cloud security right now. So my day job, I work in security research, both in AWS and GCP.
Okay.
So I'm researching attacker techniques, trying to figure out how the bad guys are getting into cloud deployments. And so that's going to inform some detection engineering work that I'm doing, then writing detections and sort of writing the logic, which will then prevent my actions to get into an environment. So that's hashtag day job, right? Then I'm also the author of the SAN Sec 549 Enterprise Cloud Security Architecture course. So I have my life kind of squarely in that architecture realm, staying on top of all of the latest and greatest patterns of like the most secure deployments for identity architecture or network architecture. What's the most secure patterns for doing, say, a data lake in AWS and GCP? And then, of course, I have kind of a background in web app pen testing. That's kind of where I came up, is doing web app pen testing. That's how I got into cloud security. So my feet are in a couple different streams. I think you've had me on the security architecture of month as well. It keeps me busy, and I don't think I'd want it any other way.
That's pretty awesome. And I think I'll definitely recommend checking out the course that you've written as well and the previous episode we've done, because you've had architecture, pen testing, and now research as well. You have an open source tool that was reached you'll talk about later on as well. So talking about pen testing and tapping into your web app pen testing and now the cloud security testing experience, how different would you say is pen testing in AWS versus, say, Google Cloud?
You know, obviously your goals are going to be the same, right? You interact with the client, you understand what they're concerned about, you understand where their crown jewels are, and then you attempt to test their controls. But any differences between the AWS pen testing and pen testing in GCP is going to come down to the difference in how those two clouds are constructed, right?
Yep.
So, you know, in AWS, you're going to be testing a lot of like role assumptions, using role assumptions to have lateral movement. In GCP, you're going to attempt to act as service accounts for lateral movement. That's going to be a little bit of a difference. So the difference is going to be around the construction of the clouds. And then potentially, and I hate to even say this, but you know, potentially there might be a maturity difference, really. More people have been in AWS longer, and more people have had time to have more mature, secure deployments. You know, you might have a client who's had 10 years in an AWS environment and have been able to iterate and have automated security controls. So you can really push those boundaries and try to edge cases. In GCP, you know, you might have a client who's maybe just a couple of years into their deployment, or they have an acquisition. So that kind of pen test is going to look very different. You're going to actually find a lot of low-hanging fruit. And you can't, say, pull out every trick in your bag, right? You have to meet the client where they are.
I think I appreciate the nuance of people maybe more mature on AWS because it's been longer, blah, blah. And do you feel like Azure would be similar as well? Like, I think there would be the same similar spectrum of, because GCP kind of came almost like the third person in the already busy cloud market with AWS and Azure, to your point. And I guess I was a CISO for a company, which, all for the example that you gave, acquired a company that had GCP.
Yeah.
Exactly. But you can't go down that path. Now, I'm sure people start off with GCP as well. There are ones out there. Would you say the pen test for a Google Cloud, and as I say this, I'm going to rub a few people off, is not a config review? Or maybe even, what is the config review for people who are probably getting it for the first time? Because a lot of people say cloud pen testing is just a config review and they're just trying to, some kind of a scanner, and that's the end of the story. What's your opinion on pen testing cloud security? It doesn't matter if it's Google Cloud or otherwise.
Well, I mean, comparing it to like a config review and pen testing, your goals are the same, right? You're trying to determine, are your client's controls sufficient and where are their gaps? But the mechanisms that you use to answer those questions are totally different. A config review, you're pulling evidence, right? You're asking the system, what are all the bits and bobs, the configuration? What are all the ones and zeros? How are all the switches flipped, right? And then you're presenting that in report form and comparing it against, say, a framework. Where a pen test is actually going to be attempting to exercise those controls and trying to circumvent those controls to achieve an attacker goal. So again, you're trying to say, are these controls sufficient? Are these configurations sufficient? But you're going about them in two different ways. Pen test is trying to exercise them, push them to circumvent them. And a config review is pulling evidence.
Oh, I love how you've explained this, because a lot of times I imagine when I talk about pen testing, or at least a traditional pen test, people just assume that I'm just going to go into an environment, run an Nmap, and, you know, Bob's your uncle after that. How would you differentiate between like the cloud pen test and a traditional pen test, I guess?
Right. So in a cloud pen test, and we're just talking about like the scope of the cloud, right? Like what is the cloud? You know, where's the cloud? These layer 7 protocols. It's HTTP. It's these published APIs. So what are you doing with these APIs? You're attempting to use them for a particular goal. And your goals are like exfiltration of data, the corruption of data, DDoS. There's a handful of attacker goals. So you're trying to use and abuse those HTTP requests.
Yep.
That's within the cloud domain. But the cloud domain has these edges where they butt up against other domains. So if your cloud pen test only stays within those CSP-provided HTTP APIs, you're probably missing something.
Interesting. And to your point, most applications these days that are hosted in Google Cloud go beyond that, obviously. It's not just the services that they're using in Google Cloud, whether it's a IaaS or a PaaS or a SaaS service to run the application that could require pen tests, but there could be a broader context of APIs that are probably required a bit more. Like there could be elements of application and network security that would be required that people would have to consider in this. What's your thought process when you would explain how would you go about pen testing a Google Cloud account? What's a good, I guess, step forward?
How would you begin?
Yeah, how would you go kind of start? Like I imagine a lot of people who've come to this conversation, they want to understand the methodology, what's your thought process. If they were to start doing pen testing of Google Cloud or even an assessment of Google Cloud as to what does that look like, what would be your thought process on that?
Well, I always recommend people read the docs, right? Understand what you're testing. Understand that Google Cloud is a resource-based IAM CSP, meaning that every resource can have a policy attached to it, right? So understand the CSP that you're attacking. Just because you're an expert in AWS doesn't mean that you're going to be an expert in GCP, really, because the model is flipped on its head. And once you kind of get a sense of GCP, you might end up loving it. That's a sad fact. Mm-hmm. You might end up really loving how it works. So step one, RTFM, read the docs.
Yeah.
Understand what you're testing. You're going to save yourself so much time instead of just chasing ghosts. The next one probably is understand the confluence between your web app, your application security, and your cloud security. That's going to be a lot of your points of initial access is your web apps. You know, you're going to have your public access is going to be your web apps hosted on GCP compute, on Cloud Run. So understanding the confluence between maybe a web app vulnerability, like remote code execution, like SSRF, understanding how those can then translate into a foothold in the cloud. That's going to be your first step in understanding initial access in any of the clouds, really.
I love the example you had with, unlike AWS, jumping straight into GCP, you probably would not understand it, what's going on, and especially if there's policy attached to every resource and stuff. Are there any common GCP services that people use? Because I imagine people who are listening to this may have no context of Google Cloud, but some may do. What are some of the common services that you hear people use in GCP? I'm assuming IAM is definitely one of them because everyone needs identity. Outside of that, do you hear a lot more people using heavy compute or heavy data? Like, I know I'm throwing off a question, but I'm just curious, what do you see normally people use GCP for?
Cloud Run's a really distinctive service within GCP. So understanding Cloud Run is a great mechanism for deploying and hosting containers. I forget the project that it's built on, but I would really understand what that service model looks like. It's also primarily used for big data, right? If an organization has Google Cloud, it's not likely that they're using it for their web apps. I mean, they might have a handful of web apps. It's not likely that they're using it for workloads like they are in AWS. It's more likely that they're using it for big data. So understanding BigQuery is understanding the access model around BigQuery, which is massively complicated. Understanding the mechanisms for exfiltrating data with BigQuery, which again is, I cannot count them on my fingers, massively complicated. Understanding the mechanisms for data access at the table level, at the row level, at the column level, at the authorized view level, cross project, all of that is going to be key for achieving your goals as a pen tester, which is demonstrating impact to your client.
Interesting. And are there any low-hanging fruits that people can look out for in Google Cloud?
Yeah. I mean, that kind of goes back to, you know, the maturity of your customer, of your client.
Right.
How long have they been in Google Cloud? Where are they benchmarked? There's a really great paper that Google has out. It's called the Cloud Adoption Framework. And it benchmarks like there's all these descriptions about where an organization might be on these different pillars along their kind of cloud adoption and understanding where they are in that journey. If they're relatively early on, you're going to see these markers of low-hanging fruit. You're going to see a lot of use of default service accounts, particularly. And so that's, as a pen tester, that's what you really want to focus on. You want to focus on the use and abuse of default service accounts and the excessive permissions that come with them, that they're automatically assigned the editor role, which I forgot last time I checked had over 5,000 permissions. It might be six. It's hard to keep track. Like I said, meet your client where they're at. If that's what you're seeing in the environment, focus on the use and abuse of the default service accounts and the permissions associated with them. Yep. And then focus on trying to get them on a pathway to not use default service accounts, to use custom service accounts with more finely scoped roles.
And what are default service accounts for people who do not know what that is?
Yeah. You know, I'd love to know who made this decision, but at some point, there's a room of very smart people at Google who decided that whenever you enable certain APIs within a Google project, automatically a service account is created. There's two default service accounts, a default compute and a default app engine. So whenever you enable the app engine service account or the compute service account, whenever you enable the app engine API and the compute API, these two service accounts are just automatically created within your project. And they're assigned the editor roles so that it makes uptick of Google Compute and Google App Engine really easy. You don't have to worry about the permissions associated with those pieces of infrastructure. They're sort of automatically created for you. And really excessive permissions are created that it's really hard to run into any friction when you're first creating them. Great for uptick, right? If you really want people to use your services right away and not have any issues. Horrible for security. And it just seems like there's no way to undo that crime against, you know, service account humanity. It's just baked into the platform right now. And there are, I'm just assuming, countless customers that are relying on this functionality just to keep the engines of their Google projects going. I can only imagine that there is a lot of hand-wringing internally about this awful design decision that was made that is causing so much consternation, but seems really impossible to backtrack from.
So you said like the people who may not be as mature would have the default service account. I'm assuming the experienced ones are deleting them. And then that's why you're going to go into a bit more kind of form of pen testing at that point in time?
Yeah. So the more mature organizations are going to enable an org policy constraint that's going to prevent the creation of these so that when you enable the APIs, they're not created at all. And then it's going to force whoever is creating the compute and the app engine to create their own service account and then assign a more restrictive role. You could also say another level on the maturity scale would be to have all of your service accounts be relatively scoped. So you can say all of your service accounts must only have this very, you know, tightly scoped role attached to it. You know, it can only have this one, you know, maybe custom role that we assign to you. So there's a few different levels of the maturity roadmap that you can do with service accounts.
Interesting. And I think I find it fascinating to the point that unlike AWS, and I love the example of Google Cloud also because it kind of helps explain the complexity of just generally how much Google is used by a lot of companies. And I think we have a mutual friend, Carl, coming in a couple of days as well, hopefully. So we'll talk about the whole idea behind the Azure side of things as well. The uniqueness about the cloud usage for Google is the fact that people have Google Workspace, Google Analytics. Like, this is a lot of these Google other products that are almost like an octopus inside your organization already before you even know it. Is there already the direct relationship between if I have a Google Analytics account or a Google Workspace, I already have Google Cloud, or do I have to still enable it?
Likely you do already have Google Cloud if you have Google Workspace. By default, Google Workspace is considered like an app. Google Cloud is considered like another app within Workspace. So you have Workspace as sort of like the orchestrator. And then there's all of these apps within the ecosystem. There's Mail, there's Calendar, there's Analytics. And some of these are kind of automatically turned on for all of your users. And some of them you have to manually enable. And Google Cloud is one of those apps that's automatically turned on for all of your users. So automatically, if you have a Google Workspace presence, all of your users can already create Google Cloud projects. And that's another one of those design decisions that I'm sure was created to enhance uptick and to reduce friction.
Yeah.
It's also created a lot of headaches for organizations when they realize that they have Google Cloud presence that they didn't know about.
Yeah, I would imagine it would be even hard to identify how much of the current staff population in your organization has access to both Google Workspace and Google Cloud. I imagine that would be a challenge as well from an architecture perspective.
Well, if you have control of your Google Workspace, if you've wrangled control of it, that means you've registered your domain with Google Workspace and you've gained control. From there, you can understand who has the ability to create Google Cloud projects, and then you can wrangle it in under your domain.
Right.
Ability. But until you do that, and it's sort of invisible to you.
Interesting. And what about things like, so another few terminologies for people who may be new, but the whole Google project, Google organization, folders, and all of that. The way I'm thinking about this is like, how do you persist your access in Google Cloud? Because I think I'm thinking, oh, wait, so if I get access to a Google Workspace or some other Gmail account, I should try and see if I can go into a subsequent Google Cloud account from there. Same with analytics or whatever. For whatever reason, my phishing attempt succeeded. And then the other way I was thinking is, oh, maybe, is there like a concept of, you know, how temporary credentials can be created and how do I persist my access? Like, that's kind of where I'm coming from. So one way I thought about this was, oh, okay, Google Workspace, jump onto it or create myself a Google Workspace account. No one finds out until 6 months later that I have an account which has access to Google Cloud. What are some of the other ways that people can persist access to Google Cloud?
Well, let's talk about how you persist access within AWS. Like a common mechanism for persisting access in AWS is, say, like, I will use air quotes, but like backdooring an IAM role, saying like updating the trust policy that says like an external entity can assume this role. That would be an AWS persistence mechanism. Yeah. So the equivalent in GCP would be to say, to take a service account and then to say an external entity can act as that service account.
Interesting.
That would be the equivalent, right? And so you could also assign an external entity permissions at any level within, say, the folder, the project, or within the resources.
Yep.
But your eyebrow raised and this, you know, like, oh, this is very concerning. You can assign external entities access. But there are mechanisms to prevent that within org policies. So This is probably another teaching moment for clients that if you're able to persist access with an external principal, that this is another teaching moment where you can highlight some of the controls available to them, like restricting external domains.
That's a great reminder that shared responsibility, as when it started as a conversation between just your CSP and the customer, I almost feel like it's like a sandwich now where you have the CSP, the cloud service provider, who has their own sets of shared responsibility. Then there's you in the middle, right next to it, where you're consuming the services from the cloud provider. And then there is another, I guess, to finish the sandwich, you have your attachment to third-party software that'll help you with performance, monitoring it, and all the things with it. So it's almost like a great sandwich that we live in, and shared responsibility for me is like a great combination of, as a customer, I have to be responsible for my side of security and hopefully understand that this differentiation between myself and the cloud service provider, but at the same time, do the same for the third parties as well and constantly monitor and all of that. So I love that external identity example. Any other examples that come to mind with, if you have an example of a security bug you found, or maybe just to help pitch in for people, like what would be an example of a result someone would expect from a Google Cloud pen test kind of thing, which is not just a configuration.
Well, I love your mention shared responsibility model, because it allows me to talk about, Google talks about, you know, they don't have the shared responsibility model, or they've kind of iterated beyond that. They think of it more as shared fate, which is this concept of they have skin in the game as well, as far as how secure their customers are. They should think of it as, if a customer is failing, they are failing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think has led them to create their whole suite of org policy constraints. Shout out to Jason Dyke. He maintains the org policy bot, which publishes changes to and updates to the org policies within GCP. And those are those constraints that you can apply at multiple levels of your organization to guardrail and restrict your environment.
And by the way, Jason Dyke was on the show a couple of years ago, I think, but super, super nice dude about Google Cloud as well. So yeah, I think I'll definitely put a link to that report as well if I can. Because do you find that any common TTPs that come to mind when that you hear from Google Cloud quite often? Like I think we kind of spoke about the external party and I guess having access. We also spoke about the service account. Anything else that pops to mind? I mean, I guess TTP is tools, techniques, and
procedures. Yeah,
that's pretty good. Yeah, because people would be like, "What is TTP?" Like, sounds like a disease. But
that's definitely right.
Yeah, it does sound like a disease. So what would be some of the common DDBs that you can think of for Google Cloud?
So Google has a team called the GCAT team. They put out every couple times a year, they put out this Threat Horizons report. And there's a really good graph in there just highlighting what they called risky actions.
Okay.
In Google Cloud, a risky action isn't necessarily a TTP, right? So this isn't quite apples to apples with your question, but it's a good conversation point. What they highlight in the graph is what are the risky actions that they're seeing within Google projects, things that they know that might be indicative of a threat actor and how often they're seeing it. And by far, the biggest thing that they're seeing is cross-project service account access. So a service account that lives in one project and is accessing resources in another. They're defining that as a potential risky action, right?
And would you say, is it just a project or can it be, because I imagine at scale where people have been using it for a long time, I mean, they've been mature in their Google Cloud, they started in it and now they spent 3-4 years in it. Would there be like multiple organizations? You know how some people have, like they started with one AWS structure and then suddenly they acquired another company, then there's another AWS structure, no one combines it ever, now it becomes your like security and you're managing two different structures of it. Maybe
yeah,
it would be common in Google Cloud space as well.
Absolutely, yeah, it all gets kind of like hodgepodge together, right?
Yeah.
I just realized that I misspoke. The most common risky action isn't a service account with permissions in another, it's a service account impersonating another service account, right? So it's this cross-project impersonation is what they're highlighting the risky action is. And as you mentioned, if there's, you know, kind of like what we call organic growth. If there's organic growth within an organization or an acquisition that gets tacked on, you might see some of these risky actions. Are they TTPs? Are they a threat actor? Probably not. Could be.
Yeah.
But at a minimum, there are things that highlight maybe not the best practices.
Yeah. And would you say the quote-unquote risky actions, as we're calling it? By the way, I did not know what the reports. That's pretty awesome that they actually published, because they have a big cybersecurity action team as well. So that's pretty awesome, the team to
That report. I've heard that there's rumors that they have track suits as well. So
Pictures
of them enter their track suits.
I might have to look that up one day.
I need the GCAT team in track suits.
Yeah, well, if there's one, I would definitely find out for you as well, because I would love to have one of those track suits as well. We're trying to get one for Cloud Security Podcast, but haven't been able to get that yet. Haven't got a good supplier, but maybe someone in the comments can help me out with this. The next question that I had was more around the enumeration part for, so we kind of spoke about the organic growth that people may have, and I imagine that would add more complexity. And so when someone's trying to pen test, would that be right? If I was looking at two organically grown Google structures, they have to talk to each other. They have to still come via the internet. They would not be within the Google
environment. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different ways to connect them by identity, right? You can establish OIDC connection, right? So there might be a workload identity pool connecting maybe two different organizations, two different projects. And then it's just, it's just another random third party. There's nothing special about it. Or you can grant permissions from one entity into the other, and then they just use OAuth, right? So it's all just coming over the internet via trust, via OIDC, or just directly granting permissions into the project. That would be how you'd connect them from an identity perspective.
And I think from that point onwards is basically the application itself. And again, calling out the fact that it's not like all this while we've collected evidence about using Config Review, collected evidence about the fact that, hey, is anything misconfigured in terms of service account, third-party access, or anything else that looks suspicious or probably is a risky action, then use that as a way to kind of go, okay, what's the next thing I can do to gain access to the application? We kind of touched on SSRF just before, and I think a lot of people, when they hear SSRF, they hear the old AWS CLI version of SSRF, where they think, oh, it's this profile, I get access to server, and look at that, Capital One happened after that or whatever. My understanding was that kind of SSRF does not exist in Google Cloud because of the way their access token and keys works. Is there an SSRF like that in GCP now, or would SSRF be the traditional SSRF, not the one that people talk about from an AWS perspective?
Yeah, there absolutely could be. It's more difficult, right? Okay. And it's more difficult to perform SSRF within Google Cloud because they use tokens, just like you could with IMDS v2 in AWS. I would say you could. It's very difficult organizationally to move thousands and thousands of workloads to v2. So you don't see a big uptick. That's one of the places where Google Cloud made a good design decision up front. So certainly SSRF is very much still in play, but more difficult. More likely we're looking at remote code execution. So when you're looking at those edges where cloud security and application security meet, how can application security inform cloud security? It's likely with remote code execution. So anybody who's looking for like more information on that, I love reading bug reports.
Oh, yeah.
Those are often published. Some of the coolest bug reports from like HackerOne are published. Just look for SSRF or RCE and look for their impact on the cloud. You can really find some very creative folks in trying to increase the impact of their bugs.
Wow. Oh, actually, that's a good word because we've been talking about the fact that the security review or doing a proper cloud pen test is a way to increase the impact of an existing bug you may find, which might be traditionally a low risk or a medium risk. You at least increase the risk level of the bug that you identified by making sure that you are just including something which is from the cloud security perspective. I guess one more question then. We kind of spoke about, I guess, how can people, like the thought process and what you can find as low-hanging fruit. We also spoke about the complexity of architecture. I'm also curious if there are any open source tools that you, I know you have one, but I think a lot of people think about when they think about tools for pen testing, they almost think like straight away Nmap. And I think before the call, you kind of spoke about the fact that are there tools like that in the cloud space? And obviously, love for you to share your open source tool as well, just in what that does and everything.
Yeah, there are a couple tools specifically that are really good for pen testing. Paku from Rhino Security came out 5 years ago, still very tried and true as far as targeting infrastructure that already exists. And performing, I think, you know, maybe 30 different attacks you can choose from. That's AWS only. I think Carl has one out that's for Azure.
Yep.
Microburst.
Microburst, yeah.
And these tools have a couple of things in common is that they're going to be targeting infrastructure that already exists. So imagine you're a pen tester. You get dropped into an environment. You need to target what's there.
Mm, yep.
That's what these tools are doing. I have a tool that was just released that has a little bit of a different methodology. It spins up and creates infrastructure for you. So it doesn't rely on infrastructure that's there. It'll perform actions, you know, attack techniques on infrastructure that I create, manage, destroy with Terraform. So in that sense, it's not a great pen testing tool. Right? Mm-hmm. If you're going to be dropped in an environment, you need to target what's there. You don't need to target what you're going to create. But it's a really good tool for understanding how attack techniques work. It's a really great tool for creating detection samples. If you want to understand how a particular attack technique generates logs, this is what you want to use, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a really great tool for validating your control. So if you have a control that should prevent an action, you can spin up my project called the DERF and attempt to test that control over and over again by, say, creating an access key against a user or, say, assigning an external user to a GCP IAM policy. Things that you have controls against that should be prevented,
mm-hmm.
you can attempt to test those controls kind of in a continuous manner.
Okay. So the infrastructure already existing. Infrastructure being created. We kind of spoke about Strata as well. What was that about?
Stratus, yeah.
Yeah, Stratus.
Well, Stratus is a great project from Christoph at Datadog. His project has a very similar goal. So it spins up infrastructure for the end user.
Yep.
And it targets more clouds than mine does. Actually, it targets AWS, GCP, Azure, Kubernetes, and it performs attack techniques against them. But the difference between my tool, DERF, and Stratus is his is operated kind of at the CLI by the end user. You download Stratus and it's a single go binary and you perform those actions kind of from your endpoint. What the DERF does is it deploys the attack techniques as Google workflows in Google Cloud. So it's a cloud-hosted project. So I can deploy attack techniques and I can then automate them in the cloud or I can have other folks come by and perform attack techniques. It kind of separates me, the attacker, from the attack execution, which might be like an automated process or it might be some other end user.
Maybe this is a good time to talk about the fact that I would love to kind of have, you and I were talking about this. I think it'd be good to kind of have a walkthrough of the open source so that people can actually see what that looks like and in action and everything. So I'll probably talk about it. If anyone has any questions, feel free to drop them in as well while we go through the non-technical questions. Now, that's the technical questions I had, but if anyone has any technical questions for Kat over here, feel free to drop that in while I go through the non-technical one. It's been some time since you've answered these, so I wonder if the answers are any different.
I'm not prepared for this.
Oh, well, you'll be fine. What do you spend most time on when you're not working on cloud pen testing?
Oh, I'm in my garden, sheesh. Like, if you follow my LinkedIn, it's all just tomatoes right now. I was sick this weekend, but I still managed to make like a bunch of tomato paste.
Oh, nice.
I had probably a bushel of tomatoes that I picked. And then I cooked down all of those tomatoes down to several quarts of tomato paste over like 6 hours, just like stirring and stirring and stirring. It's like in Minnesota right now, it's like prime harvest season. So I'm in my garden constantly.
Oh, wow. Well, harvest season sounds like a great idea as well. I was going to drop a link for the Derf Cloud because you've done a great comparison of the entire process as well in terms of how it would look like for which of the tools you use. I'll leave that in there for people to kind of copy and see what that looks like. The other question that I had for you, which is non-technical one, but it's something that you're proud of that is not on your social media. Tomatoes?
Yeah, probably. Oh, let me get this for you. This is my favorite tomato.
Oh my God. How? So
every year I give a ribbon award to my favorite tomato. This is my favorite tomato this year, everybody. I've not put this on social media, so this counts.
This is like exclusive. How massive is that?
It's not that big. It's maybe a pound and a half.
Oh, okay, right.
I've definitely grown larger tomatoes, but this is winning the award for the best tomato this year for its color, its consistency, look, very little blossom and rot. Look.
Yeah, wow. So this I did not realize there was so much detail to tomatoes as well. That's pretty awesome.
This is a pink jazz tomato, and this won the Blue Ribbon Award this year.
All right. Okay. Well, I thank you for sharing the exclusive. Last one, what's your favorite cuisine or restaurant that you can share?
Of Indian food, Ashish. We have a dosa restaurant less than a mile from my house.
Nice.
If you come by, I'll just like feed you dosas.
I would definitely try that as well. So I appreciate the exclusive of the tomato as well. So thank you for sharing that. For people who want to know more about Derf Cloud, I'll put the link on the show notes and when this goes on YouTube as well. Where can people find you otherwise on the internet? LinkedIn? I guess.
Then NightmareJS on Twitter, X. Also, I'm on the InfoSec Exchange. I'm pretty active on the InfoSec Exchange Mastodon. I really like it.
Are there people there? I feel like this.
Yeah, there's people there. Me.
No, bro. I mean, more than you, because I feel like I don't hear much about it now. So I just wasn't sure if people are actually still hanging on there.
I think so. You know, it comes in waves. Whenever there's like some controversy on Twitter, if more people show up, I'm hanging on. I'm hanging on to Mastodon.
Fair enough. Because Mastodon, I imagine the company is basically going, we want more controversy with Twitter because we keep getting the people maintaining this. But I'll put that in the show notes as well so people can find you over there as well. But thank you so much for coming on the show. And I will make sure that we have another session to walk through on the whole Derf Cloud as well. So thank you everyone else who was watching and look out for the episode when it comes out on YouTube as well. But otherwise, we'll see you in the next episode. Thanks, Jared. Thanks, everyone else. See ya. Peace.